You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show coming at you on a Monday morning or Monday afternoon, depending on where you are. As always, I'm joined by Andrew Combo Salop to discuss the latest in the NBA and all the other things in between. What's going on, Combo?
We had like a fitness podcast that wasn't recorded before the recording. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anything it takes to get me going and actually doing the proper exercises I need to do for my back. I don't do them. I know what they all are. I bookmark every three new ones every day, and then I don't do them. So if you can help me figure out how to make that happen, Combo, I am all ears.
Sometimes a more holistic approach, maybe not even only focusing on the back, could help the back.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I just need to be able to stretch a little bit even during the day. And I was going to Stretch Lab, which is all across the country, a great place where they will just stretch the crap out of you. Then, you know, the funny thing was I was doing it and I was liking it. And I'm like, okay, I got to do more because I'm still so inflexible. And then I was doing three times a week and it was actually making it worse. That was making me, I was like, just not feeling well. And I finally got it back down to like once a week. And that was actually, you know, my posture was better. I was walking better, all those things. So I think I have to go back there. Maybe we'll get, you know, a sponsorship out of all this.
Oh, I would love that. I think with you, like, you're really pedal to the metal with everything you do, which is great. Like, you're like that with the videos. You work super hard at them. But sometimes you don't need that much to get tremendous benefit. Like, the Stretch Lab, it sounds great. But sometimes just micro-dosing stretching could do great as well, even if it's not too much, you know?
Yeah, and forgive my hair today.
Oh, it's all right.
Watching this. I got a haircut, though, but now it's all whatever. I was up really early. I'm working on some footage. I watched the end of the Clippers-Warriors game. I wanted to see that from a Saturday night. It was kind of nice, by the way, to not have any games yesterday and kind of have a little day off. Meanwhile, I ended up working, like you mentioned, as hard as I could to get the video. Did you happen to see the video I did?
I did. I have some thoughts on that because some of the stuff you talked about actually confirmed what I was thinking.
Okay. And hats up, hat tip to Dragonfly Jones over on Twitter, because he was the guy who was like, some insane person's going to go look up the footage of them playing against each other to find out what's going on, this whole thing is about. And that gave me the idea to do it. And someone was like, and then we got some other information on Twitter before where, you know, they played eight games against each other and this and that, but it really isn't necessarily that fair because the roles are so much different. You know, Ime was a guy who would, you know, struggle to make it in the league and to hang on. And LeBron is LeBron at that time too. So, but it was remarkable that how literally just about every chance LeBron got, no matter what, from the start of Ime's career, he would just go at him and make sure to go at him, which just makes sense. Ime was much smaller, not as strong, not as quick. And you know, Ime did okay on a couple times, but then, you know, a lot of the times LeBron just seemed to relish this fact. So there might be even more to that. The one thing I left out was a couple things. Ime was on the Spurs coaching staff when they beat Miami Heat, although the Miami Heat beat them the year before. So there was something there that maybe Ime has on LeBron, whatever. And then, do you know that story about Ime when he's playing on the Nigerian national team? Or no, yeah, the national team in 2007 or something. Do you know that story?
Tell me more.
They got into a fight after the game was over with the Algerian national team. And Ime was like taking on six guys at once, and like it looked like a video game or something. And he was catching guys in the midair, like fists and whatever. And it was one guy who was describing it was like he was even telling him, "Hey, watch your back now." And right was the guy who was going to come while he's still fighting three other guys. So Ime is a guy you don't want to mess around with. You can see it in his demeanor, right? He is very still. You know what I mean? And those are the guys who, you know, can get you if you're not giving them the proper respect.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is something you see growing up playing basketball, that kind of talk. He didn't exactly call them a B. He's saying you're being like a B, which is not as bad. I know it's semantics, but it's really not as bad. And obviously, Ime is not, he doesn't look at LeBron as maybe some of the fans look at him, right? He looks at him a little bit different. Like, he looks like he's you know, they're on the same level. And not obviously not as players, but he's not a fan of LeBron or anything like that. So I think Ime came into this game, even before I saw this video that you made, right? I knew he came into the game not really being fond of LeBron from what I saw there. It's like he had something pent up. He was holding something inside, and he wasn't the biggest fan of LeBron. And I think it came out there in that situation.
Yeah. And by the way, we lost Andrew for a second. Maybe he'll be back. To get that camera back on. But, you know, it's hard to read Ime's lips. He doesn't move his lips too much, so that's not so easy. And then it's he talks quietly. Like, he got a tech in the beginning, in the first half, and I was staring at it. The only footage we could see of him, he didn't look like he was speaking at all. So I really can't figure out what that was about, unless he was sort of murmuring really low under his breath near the ref who heard it. He didn't seem to mind when he got teed up. You know, mostly coaches get all upset when they get a tee and they're like, what are you doing? Whatever. So he just took it all in stride. He takes everything in stride, right? Nothing seems to faze that guy. And you're right. I think any advantage you have, they were down 14 at the time. So I suspect that, you know, if you're trying to get into LeBron's head and get him off his game, you know, you could try that. I don't know if that works as well. There are obviously players out there that do suffer when you get into their head. Do you think that LeBron is that kid? That guy?
No, I think if it comes down to the end of a game and it's close, I don't think a coach talking to LeBron is going to phase them in the slightest. He had Ime guarding him full court pressure, as we saw in your video, and that didn't phase him. I don't think you get to the level that LeBron gets to by being phased by trash talk, you know? Right. That guy, you know, I don't want to get to this conversation. He's either the greatest or second greatest player of all time.
I had to mute a bunch of conversations on Twitter off of this because of that. So, but I also really appreciated LeBron's response. It was hard to hear all of it because, you know, someone got the reverse shot where we could hear LeBron's actually talking. And I do appreciate that he went the high road and was trying to scold him to say, you know what, that's not, we don't use that word anymore. Like, that's just not, you know, a place we want to use it, whatever, which I thought was really nice. And it did feel like perhaps Ime was in like, what are you going to do about it kind of stuff, right? Which is another interesting thing, which, you know, I, the motivation's there. He's a competitor. You know, NBA players don't lose their competitiveness once they're done playing, right. And especially when you're coaching. And you have a guy like Dylan Brooks, who's already been trying to get underneath LeBron's skin the whole time. I think LeBron is really maybe rejuvenated by it. He had a move on him in the first half and then gave him a look with a smile, right? It wasn't a glaring angry, right? It was LeBron like just letting him know he's still LeBron. And that's fun. That's always fun to see when, you know, the old dudes can still get in there and show the youngins some things.
It feels like the Rockets and the Lakers have played 40 times this season already with all the LeBron, Dylan Brooks stuff. Now we have this stuff with Ime and LeBron. I also would say that, why did the ref tech them? I think he brought more attention to the situation. I don't even know, like, do you think you would have even made a video from this if they were never teched? Like, it just would have been another, like, little bit of trash talking on the side.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because he got ejected is what made it newsworthy. And the referee obviously knew that he already had a technical foul, merited or not. So that was part of it. Listen, you know, it looked like LeBron said something pretty inflammatory, which is interesting because he already told him not to use the B word. But then I don't know, man, there was some word that came out that looked like maybe it started with an F and then the next word was a P. And we'll never know what he said.
Well,
Ime
brought the B word into it. So it's fair game after that, right?
I guess so. But then, you know, LeBron was saying, don't do that. And then did his own version of something. And that, by the way, that's what caused it. You see the referee go, okay, we got to stop this.
Well, in fairness, LeBron says, don't do that. Okay, we're getting there. So let's do it. You know what I mean?
Fine. Yeah. I guess, you know, the P word is worse than the B word, isn't it?
I think either could bring on a fight the way I grew up playing basketball. Like, I think either of those things could bring upon a fight. I would say he said, you're acting like a B, which is not as bad as saying you're a B, even though it's all semantics at the end of the day.
Sort of in the moment, it might be hard to parse that, but I hear you. You know, and Ime's never going to throw the first punch. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy, right? He's not going to step up. He's going to take you out if you step up to him, right? He seems so calm and collected in that end.
I mean, I don't think it'll get – that's also another reason. Like, Ime's obviously not scared, but I also think Ime knows that it's never going to get physical.
Right. So, I mean, I would have liked to have – I didn't think I saw the pool report after the game from the ref. I would like to have heard a little bit more insight from him to figure out what his thought process. Maybe if it's come out, someone in the comments, let us know if it came out or anybody reported on that from the referee standpoint. A lot of times they'll interview them afterwards. But, you know, listen, I'm going to look up the schedule because I'm wondering, do they have a fourth game again? They played three so far.
It feels like 30, Coach Nick.
What's that?
Everything, it feels like 30 games they've played already. It feels like every game is Rockets Lakers with all the viral moments.
They have another game on Monday, January 29th in LA. Ooh,
Ime's gonna suit up.
Absolutely right. I mean, listen, you know, he wasn't helpful that much back in the day. He in his first year, he actually played a bunch, having been signed as a free agent, and then, you know, went down from there. But, you know, he was okay. He was an okay player. You know, he wasn't a great athlete, and he wasn't a great shooter. But
he seems to be a great coach, the way he turned around the Celtics, the way he's turning around the Rockets. They're coming on with a really great start. So, you know, maybe his second chapter will be better than his first.
For sure. Listen, I think he's got, you know, the respect of the people he coaches. And despite what happened in Boston, I don't think that's diminished him at all. And yeah, he learned from the best. He learned from Pop. He learned from, you know, being in the Brad Stevens, area. So he's a very good coach. And I would probably want to, you know, play for him.
Speaking of Pop, I wanted to ask you this, Coach, because, you know, before the NBA season, I talked about how I think Pop should take the Press Maravich approach when it came to Chet in terms of just letting him flourish, letting him play, don't put him in too much of a role. And now we see, with Wemby.
You said Chet.
Oh my God, there you go, Chet. Yeah, Wemby. Okay, they're both great. Wemby. So I think that this is the right approach, even though they're really bad right now. I think it maximizes their future with the Wemby experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd just be nice to have, you know, not have Sohan play the point guard as much as he's doing and get, you know, a regular point guard in there. They have Jones.
Well, do you think this helps him as like a secondary playmaker in the future? Like, even if you don't want to play Jeremy at point right now, it doesn't matter if we win right now and we're developing his ball handling skills.
Yeah, you know,
and his decision making.
Yeah, as long as they do, as long as they get some of those minutes in there, which they are. So, you know, that is true. Although it's hard to picture, like, it's funny. It's hard to picture Pop and the Spurs tanking, but they've done this in the past. They did it to get David Robinson. They've done it to get Tim Duncan. So it's not like they haven't done this before anyway. They're smart about it. But as a result, like, they're going to be bad, and it's hard to watch sometimes. And, you know, that's too bad. And you have to worry about the residual effects that can have on young players like Wemby. But if they can kind of activate it quicker, you eliminate that risk. Like, by next year, they're getting back into focusing on bringing in some veterans and making sure they're going to try and put a good cast around him. But it's an interesting question, because then it gets into the Rookie of the Year conversation, which I think Gilbert Arenas had a great point on his show the other day, where he was talking about the fact that the ages are so different between Chet and Wemby that it isn't fair at all to compare them. You know, Chet is 2 years older.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. Let's say they were the same age. I think that Wemby obviously has the higher ceiling, but Chet is more of a winning player. He's more efficient, and he's helping a playoff team win at this moment. So I think Chet is the Rookie of the Year, but Wemby has the higher ceiling.
We have another potential spoiler of that plan, though. Do we have to talk about Jaquez for a minute?
That guy is a complete basketball player, I'll tell you that.
Did we already talk about him last time?
I think we've talked about him in the past. I think he really doesn't have too many weaknesses. And a friend of mine is actually working on him with his shooting. He's been on the show before, and that hasn't been talked enough probably, but his shooting has improved tremendously.
You know, that's good to see. Cause I talked about this before, but you know, watching him being in LA at UCLA, it was like, I just didn't think he'd ever get a chance to play the way he played at UCLA in the NBA, which would then make him not very valuable at all. Almost in that same mode as Timmy from Gonzaga, right? Like, I kind of felt the same way there, but this guy's got a whole other level of athletic ability we had not seen. And apparently a part of that was his ankles were injured for his senior year, I guess. And so he was really hobbled. But like, I just never pictured an NBA team letting him post up the way he did and didn't really stretch the floor in UCLA. So let's look at his numbers right now. He is shooting from three 39%, and he's taking three a game in 26 minutes. He's getting solid minutes. He's scoring 12 a game, grabbing boards, and getting some assists. He's actually running the pick and roll a little bit. So all things we didn't see, which kind of, you know, makes me frustrated that at UCLA in the 4 years he was there, they didn't put him in more varied situations. It's almost like a crime. He should have been doing that and displaying that in college.
Shouts to Rob Fodor. I mean, he's doing a great job working with him. I would say, like, at the college and even high school level, often they don't get the right information, even if they're getting a lot of reps when it comes to their shooting. If you're repping out the wrong way over and over again, you're not going to have much improvement. And I think even at the highest levels of college, they're just not getting the right information.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this. I work with a college player at the community college level over the weekend, and it was just – it's just really like soul killing. I'm asking them more and more about, like, what are you doing for training? What are you doing for strength and conditioning? What, all this different stuff. And like, nothing. And it's like, it wouldn't have been that hard. Even if you had, let's say, even the strength and conditioning stuff, like before the season, they were doing it, they were telling me, but then in the season, they don't really do much. And it's like, do you know how much muscle mass you can lose in the course of a season if you're not maintaining it by lifting? It's like, it's insane that no one would do that. And even if it wasn't in, like, the coaches, they don't have the budget to have a trainer, whatever. Well, then, like, somehow get the coaches, get them organized around the players to meet up and go to the weight room and work out. It's just beyond me that doesn't happen. And I have a feeling it's like that in other levels of college as well.
It's interesting because I always saw at the college level, the focus never really went away from the weight room. Maybe this is a little bit further back in the timeline. Maybe this is more like the early 2000s, but like, players used to get really big and strong, but the skill development wasn't the thing that they were, you know, keeping up with during the course of the season. And you would see college players who were NBA prospects actually lose athleticism because they got too big and bulky and too stiff by the time they got to the NBA.
Yeah, all of that is just, again, I had people crying on my shoulders playing Division I programs and telling me the things they were doing that were just so archaic and ridiculous. And certainly, you know, interestingly enough, when I was a manager at Wisconsin, we would have, you know, you had, I want to say it's 18 hours. You had 20 hours a week of practice time. So they had, for 6 days a week, they had 3 hours of practice, which is insane. And then they had 2 1-hour sessions with a coach for individual skill development. And it was great. They'd have a manager that'd help, and we'd go through all the different, you know, skills they wanted to learn. And it was all good upper level, you know, and even forward thinking three stuff that we would do back then. And I'd ask other people who were in other Division I programs if that they had structured it that way. And I don't think I've ever found anybody else that did it. It's the patina way they would do it. And it really struck me. And I wonder if it's changed much now where, yeah, you wouldn't have at least 2 hours dedicated every week to just individual instruction with one coach and one player, or maybe two players and a manager. And you're going through, you know, your individual skills. Otherwise, what's the point of running offense if they can't make the shots, they can't handle the ball, they can't make the pass? It's really 25 years behind the times in a lot of even Division I. So, yeah.
A wise man once said, and that wise man was named Combo, that better players make better teams.
That's a very wise statement, Combo.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about how fun it is to download Prize Picks and discover how much fun it is by making skill-based, real money fantasy sports entries, and best of all, you're only competing with yourself. Prize Picks offers frequent discounts, bonuses, and other exciting offers. Players can enjoy community-wide promotions, including Taco Tuesday and Flex Friday. I love that you can choose two or more players from any sport, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. I went bold this weekend by picking Kirk Cousins to throw for more than 275.5 yards, go Vikes, and Justin Fields less than 184.5 yards, bear down. And will add a whole new level to my game-watching experience as I hope some of these guys throw that ball down the field a lot. Go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CLNS. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
And another wise statement would be that if you want to get your answers, your questions answered, the best way to do that would be with a super chat over on YouTube. We will put your question on the screen. We'll give you lots of love. And with that, we have best friend of the breakdown, Martin Jose. What's up, Martin? Great to see
What's up, Martin?
There. Always with us to ask a great question. And his question is, and thank you, Martin. Really, it's so generous. What are the chances the Grizzlies will make the play-in playoffs once Ja comes back? They are currently 14th seed. All right, we got some math to go through, but what are you have zero. You're holding up a zero. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, this is not savable, I don't think, after 25 games, because not only the Grizzlies' issues, but the West is so deep.
Right. Well, let's look at it this way, because if we want to do some math, I like math. I like keep taking the emotion out of all of it, right? The 10th place team right now, that would be...
You're like Daryl Morey.
I am. Daryl and I go way back.
Okay.
So the Houston Rockets right now are 10th, just above the Golden State Warriors. They're 8-9. And that puts them in contention, not in the playoffs, but in contention, you know, to do the play-in to get in the playoffs, right? Which is, you know, what you'd want to do. So let's just call it 500, right? Let's just call it they have to be 500. They win 42 games to get there. Now, the Grizzlies have 5 wins, and they played 19 games. So let me get my calculator out here. If you make 82 minus 19, that is 63 games left. They need to win 42 total. They've only won 5. So they need to win 37 of the 63. Am I my math completely right? They need to get to 37 out of 63. So that means they need to win 26 of those games. So 26 divided by 63. No, I'm not doing this right at all. Am I? Do I have to write this out? Somebody help me. This is embarrassing. They could win 37 games. Anyway, the point being is they're winning 26% of their games right now. They'd have to win 60% or something like that, right? It's hard to imagine they could do that even with Ja, right, for a course of that season, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to integrate them back in.
Yeah, what was wrong with my math? So let's see. They have to win 37 out of the – how many games are left? 82 minus 19, 37 divided by 63 is 59%. They have to win 59%, and that's a pretty good clip. 59% would put them on par with being in the fourth or fifth place in the West. You know, I just don't see that, right? I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, it's unlikely. It's possible, but it's unlikely. Ja is great, right?
Yes.
But, you know, Steven Adams coming back, maybe I could say, okay, if they can get
those. I think they're missing him a lot, too.
Yeah. So, but he's not coming back as far as I remember, I don't think. So, that those two things are really, really hurting him. And Brandon, the other big guy who they're missing from, this is my brain, you know, Gonzaga. Brandon, help me. Oh, my goodness gracious sakes alive. Anyway, it's a good start to the show. Brandon. Come on. Brandon Clark. Thank you.
Oh, Brandon Clark.
You know, also, it's been hurting them. So, again, if they suddenly got fully loaded tomorrow, then I'd give them a 40% chance of being able to actually do it. But I don't see it right now. Thank you, Orlando. Thank you, Martin Jose, Brandon, and Bron. All the usual suspects are out there making me feel – reminding me how my brain doesn't work well. But anyway, there it is. Thank you, Martin, for that one. And Jim Lernt. It's a really good last name, Lernt. Thank you so much for your super chat. Very, very generous. Really appreciate it. And he asks, what aspects of NBA coaching do you think you'd be passable at? Tactics, talent evaluation, player optimization, skill development, etc. Well, it's an interesting question, Combo. I guess it's maybe pointed toward me, as I'm sort of the coach and you're more of the trainer guy.
I think I could say, you want me to say first, not to make this all about me, what I would be?
Yeah, don't make it about me.
Yeah, okay. So for me, it would definitely be talent evaluation and skill development. I mean, skill development and player optimization. I mean, I think there's some overlap there.
Yeah.
But yeah, those three for sure would be my strength.
I'm really good at that too, by the way. I have to toot my own horn. I'm really good at like shooting.
Let me ask you this. If you could work with an NBA team, would you rather work on tactics or more of the skill development side?
Oh, that's a great question. Jeez Louise. I mean, if I had to choose, I'd say I'd do both, but I don't know. Maybe tactics, only because it'd be nicer to sort of be in the coaching sessions more than, you know, skill development guys, I think, tend to be a little bit on the periphery, a little bit. You know what I mean?
I feel like for you, the online side of yourself is more tactics and the offline side of yourself is more skill development, even though tactics are there.
Right. Because remember, when I'm doing my skill development, I'm also integrating all of that, which is what not a lot of guys do, into how this all fits together in an offense.
Yeah. I mean, that's important. These are all pieces of the puzzle. Right. I love talent evaluation. I love breaking down draft prospects and talking about how they might develop into an NBA player and how good they could be. So all this is interesting stuff.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think a lot of times head coaches sort of go away. They're not connected at all to skill development. Like they must think that they're too busy for it. I do think that Spoelstra is involved with that and actually gets out there, right, and helps them
at certain times.
I would probably be more like that. And, you know, I think, you know, the funny thing is I was a triangle offense coach, you know, and Tex Winter was a mentor of mine. And I got, you know, I'm really good at being able to coach that and communication and motivation. The funny thing was, is my teams, I always felt like when I was going through the films later, you know, the defense, I always kind of struck me as the one as the side that they executed even better. So I always wondered, is there something there where it's like, am I a defensive coach? And I didn't realize it. I don't know. But that said, you know, I just have, you know, the kind of experience I think that kind of covers both sides of those. So I would, if I were a head coach, then I would be, I'd have my hands and I'm managing a lot of that stuff to make sure that everything is on par and on cutting edge and the right stuff. And that fits with what we're doing.
My defense was not passable.
Your individual skill, your individual playing defense was not, you were not a defender.
Yeah, not really.
Well, were you that guy that could knock the ball away from behind really well? You know,
I don't like those guys, man, because those guys get beat and then it's annoying when they try and do that. And then, you know, they sometimes like just hit your whole arm and they're not even playing good defense and they think they're playing good defense, but they're not.
I think it's a talent, though. In fact, you know, the defense that I invented, you're going to need to have it. So the funny thing is we talk about when you play a zone, sometimes it's because you want to hide a bad defensive player, like maybe you combo. Okay.
Well, maybe that maybe your defense would be great for me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So here's what we were discovering was you put him at the one, at the top of the key, you know, behind the ball, right when the start. Like if he's going to get beat anyway, just let him get beat on the top and have everybody in position to help. But I'm like, what if that guy ends up being so awesome at back tapping and was never permitted to do it and was never, you know, never had to try to do it because he was like, you know, you get benched if you ever try to do it. And all of a sudden he becomes a really great defender for you because he's so good at knocking the ball away from behind. Because there's always those guys, you know, that guy who's, he's not any good, doesn't have long arms, is not quick, but can always knock the ball when you get by him, you know, on the dribble. And if you don't switch hands fast enough or whatever. So, you know, what if it was that guy? And what if you were that guy? And suddenly we could figure out how to make you a really valuable defensive
player. I could be that guy with the long wingspan. So even better.
There you go. You have a long wingspan?
Yeah, like 6'8", 6'9".
Is that right? Like I was with you. I guess we didn't measure. And you're what, like 6'3"?
Yeah, that's why I was a good in-game dunker. Not because my bounce was the craziest, but I had really long arms with nice bounce.
Why aren't you taller?
Wait, how tall are you? I'm 6'5".
All right, but if your wingspan's 6'8", then you think you'd be 6'8".
Well, I know people like.
Were you smoking in sixth grade? Is that what you
Hell
doing?
No, I never smoked. But so, yeah, no, but what I'm saying, that's an advantage. Like they look for players with plus wingspans, like for their.
Yeah, I'm saying, I know. Yeah, but sometimes you think, well, if it's 3 or 4 inches longer than your height, then something's weird going on in there. Did something make you not as tall as you should have been? I don't know.
Oh, no, I'm way taller than I should have been if you look at my family.
Ah, okay. Well, that's interesting. All right, great. Yeah, did you sleep a lot when you were younger? Is that what it was?
I don't know. I just had a crazy growth spurt at like 17, 18. I would say most NBA players have a plus wingspan about 2 or 3 inches, right? Like you kind of get penalized in the draft process if you have a negative wingspan or your wingspan is the same as your height.
That's true. And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, you can recover, especially defensively, better if you have a longer arm wingspan to then, you know, if you got beat and you're running to get back, you can now affect the offensive player a little bit better with that wingspan. Right. I mean, it's funny. It's mostly a defense, I imagine, because a lot of times we get concerned with the really long wingspan guys shooting wise. It gets a little bit harder. Mm. You know, it's a little bit funkier. Mikhail Bridges comes to mind, but he's actually been able to solve a lot of that. And that's been a really pleasure to see. And he had a really terrible hitch that he's kind of fixed a little bit, but he's figured it out. So that's all good.
I told you a guy played with college with James Smith. He played in the G League for a bit. Good player. Did well at Marist. He was a 7-footer that really shot a lot of threes, but he had small arms, like short arms. It felt like he had a negative wingspan, even though I never measured it. But I felt like he was a good shooter because he was a big with small arms. So maybe there's some
right. Like, yeah, that's good. It's all that it comes into play for sure.
Yeah.
So we got about 10 minutes left because I know you have a hard out. So in case you want to get your questions up there, let us know that you got about 10 minutes left. The wingspan thing is interesting. I mean, I think I'm that guy who thinks you can teach anybody anything. You know, we can help them get better than what they are, whatever skill. In fact, it was weird because I tweeted out the other day, we shared a Barry Sanders clip. And what I took from Barry Sanders on the basketball side is that what he knew the secret to basketball, which was lifting both feet in the air at the same time. So all of his moves are predicated on ground reaction forces, which are when you lift your feet off and then they bounce back on the ground, you can explode much better than you would if you're just running and plodding with your feet on the ground the whole time. So it was great to see that as an example, and you can use other sports as well to influence how you want to play. And that's how I build out my all of my skill development for whatever level. You know what's funny is I teach players who are 9 years old the same things I teach the 21-year-olds. I don't know if you can do that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was showing, I was doing skip crosses with 10-year-olds on Saturday. It was really fun.
If you could dribble a basketball, you should be starting to learn that pretty soon after, right?
Yeah. And by the way, if they couldn't get it that day, maybe they'll get it in a few weeks, you know, so what? But at least now you're getting it, you're going to be ahead of the game, whereas some guy would be like, no, we can't do multi-combo dribbles with 9-year-olds in it. You know, in fact, the 9-year-old in that group, it was 10-11s, and I had a 1-9, he was actually the best at it. So it was really fun.
You mentioned the word skip, and I think it's important to focus on feet just as much as hands when you're talking about handle, because that's what makes the best ball handlers in the world truly elite. It's not only what they do with their hands, it's what they do with their feet.
Oh, I know. And in fact, the college player I was working with, I was telling them, you can do so much work without a ball that will improve you as a player. That it's not even funny. We're talking about core. You're talking about, leg strength. You're talking
jump rope and sprint hills.
There you go. Yeah. All that stuff. Really, all of a sudden your movement pattern is better, then your game is better. So
100%.
I'd almost say even like the stability to, the rotational flexibility you have in your torso compared to your lower legs is really important, which is what I need to do. That's the one big one I do is I used to do it where I'd be against my bed and I would, twist my upper body and then separate it from my lower body and then twist back. I bet you that one exercise is what kept my back in shape and not hurting me a lot. And it's just hurting me no matter what I do now. So maybe I'll do that when we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that some older players lose, right? That rotational flexibility and strength.
Yeah. And then some players just never even get like the mobility in their ankles. Ankle mobility is huge and no one ever, they ignore that. And that really helps for
that leads to knee issues.
Yeah. All right. What else can we talk about? Well, I did watch. Did you happen to check the end of the Clippers Warriors game? The Warriors had a 22-point lead at some point in that game and then lost it at the very end.
Yeah. I mean, my guy, Pierre, through the wire, shouts to Pierre. He tweeted that PG-13 is the Clippers' best player. And I have to totally agree with P on that one. Like, he's the best player right now.
Well, he is for sure. And man, is it nice to then have the Kawhi Leonard as your second best player? I mean, like, wow. It's not fair because then you got James Harden and they ran at him toward the end because James Harden was controlling too much of the game, but you run at James Harden out top and now he's either passing to Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. It's like, what are you supposed to do? And every team in the West better be really concerned about that. I'm just looking at the box score here. Now there's a couple of glaring things that were screaming at you if you watched the game and realized what was going on, which was, first of all, Curry, the Warriors need to find someone else that can help them create advantages in their offense besides Curry. It's kind of like, it's just brutal to watch him trying to do it when the whole defense loads up. And when you have a team like the Clippers that have George and Leonard and then Mann, you know what I mean? Like, they can throw some defenders out there and it just makes it really hard on him to help create anything. And also they were going back to getting it out of his hands on purpose, the Warriors, to run him off screens. And that's where he gets beat up. That's where he's getting held. That's where he's getting the people in his way. That's a little bit harder. And so the Warriors might need to remember that they go back to him on the ball a little bit more to protect him from that stuff. The last elephant in the room would be that Westbrook played less than 20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew this was probably going to happen once James Harden became a member of the LA Clippers because Westbrook is more of a fit off the bench than James Harden, and James Harden is a better point guard than Russell Westbrook. So it was inevitable that James would have those starting minutes, play more minutes, and Russell would be the guy who would come off the bench. And it wouldn't be a great fit with the other three at the end of the day unless he provided some kind of energy off the ball for right. those three players who need the basketball.
And just on an X's and O's standpoint, just so we're specific about it, you know, they like to do a lot of ISOs for Paul George, for James Harden, and for Kawhi Leonard. And when you have Russ out there, his man, it will ignore Russ. And you know, again, if you don't want to have any other kind of offense, and they don't seem to be that interested in doing much besides a lot of those ISOs, then you really it's a struggle to have Russ out there with them because it makes it so much harder on the other guys. And then, by the way, Russ went 2 for 4 from three. And so whatever it takes to get him to be – and by the way, he'll be wide open on all those shots. They're not going to guard him, even if he continues to go 500 from the line, from the three-point line. But at least he's going to make him pay in the box score. So if it takes him coming off the bench to find him shooting better from three than starting, then great. And that's the solution for them.
I mean, ISO basketball at this point, unless it's late-game situation and the shot clock situation, is an archaic way to play basketball – because of the team that they were playing against influence on the game of basketball. It's going to be very difficult to beat a team like the Kings and even more so the Nuggets if you're playing ISO basketball against read and react type offense that the Warriors have influenced the NBA to play at this point.
Right. And, you know, I want to check the percentage of time ISOs for the Clippers. They lead the league. The Mavericks are right behind them, though. So the Clippers... 10.5% of their possessions in the half court are used as ISOs. The next is the Mavericks are next at 10.1%. Then it drops down to the Brooklyn Nets at 9.3%, Celtics at 8.6%. It drops pretty dramatically after that. So, that is the issue there where they're going to run them. They're going to run them. And you know what? They're damn good at them. Let's actually look at what they rank in the points per possession here. The Clippers are 7th in terms of points per possession, just under 1.0. You know, I would probably like to see a little bit higher, but at the very least, you know, that's still pretty good. That's pretty elite. And so, as a result, you know, you have those players, they're going to let them do what they want to do. If I were Ty Lue, I'd probably want to get a little bit more control over that and cut down a little bit of those, you know, because they're so good, because Paul George is good at coming off screens, because, you know, Kawhi can move off the ball. I mean, they had a beautiful down the stretch horn set where they back screen Kawhi, Harden hits him, on a beautiful pass on a lob. For a pseudo lob dunk that was instrumental. And it's like, that's the beauty of the game they could have if they were to do that more.
Yeah. You just got a thumbs down.
You know, I think it's, so someone, we didn't figure this out, right? I think it's my browser, right? I was thinking somebody has something in my browser that but I don't have an extension. And when I do this, it will do it, but it doesn't do it, right? It's not doing it when I make the thumbs up. So who's giving me a thumbs down? Who's giving me a thumbs up? Where is that from? Is anybody in the comments watching this live on video? It keeps happening no matter what I do. By the way, it happened not only in StreamYard. It happened in
YouTube.
It was another platform I was using in my browser to be on someone else's show. So that's why I'm thinking it's my browser. But like, what is it and why? And someone needs to tell me because I can't take it anymore. Someone's out there giving me, and usually it's thumbs up. I never seen a thumbs down before. So, oh well.
Well, just staying on the Clippers real quick. For them to win a championship, at the end of the day, they need to learn how to play together, learn each other. But even on top of that, they need Kawhi Leonard to be Toronto Raptors Kawhi Leonard. And does he have that kind of gas left in the tank?
Yeah,
I'm not sure about that, but that's absolutely what they need if they're going to win a championship. It's not, there's no really like crazy in-depth analysis. Like Kawhi has to be that level of Kawhi for them to win.
I think you get one game each series that's like that from him.
Okay.
I think
is that enough in the West? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think you could. I think you're going to see one game each series, which might be enough for them because they have the other guys.
So they're legit. You think they're legit?
I think that they're legit. I think they will be legit by the time they figure this all out by the end of the year, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. They, you know, and they might make a move, maybe shore up another big man or something like that, just to have. But yeah, I think that they're legit. But then again, get in line, man. There's a whole lot of teams, and you know what Jokic is doing right now. Might have to do a video on that if anyone's going to watch it. I don't know, but Jokic is doing stuff right now, triple doubles that are out of, you know, no turnovers. It's insane.
So total points. He's leading the league. Sorry. In total points, total assists, and total rebounds, he's leading the league. And I don't think at this point of the season, nobody's ever done that before.
Right. Now, total is not the right way to do it, though, unfortunately, because
it shows you that he's an Iron Man and he's available.
Yeah, I mean, but I think what it shows you is that he is the complete package, right? No one's ever rebounded and then assisted like this, right, for the most part. I mean, Wilt actually did a triple-double 1 year, so he must be somewhere near there.
I'm convinced, Coach Dick, that Luka and Jokic are the two best players in the NBA.
Okay, I got to tell you, you got to put Haliburton somewhere up there at some point. I'm telling you, he might be the best. He might be playing, I mean, except for Jokic, he might be playing as well as anybody else in the league right now.
I love Haliburton's game. I don't know if I would go that far as of yet. I think as of right now, SGA is probably better than Haliburton.
Ooh, maybe that's the video. I don't know, man. I don't know if you could say that.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Should we do it really quick? I know you got 2 minutes left. Should I go over on Stathead and do the head-to-head?
I love Haliburton, man. I've been high on Haliburton since Iowa State. Like, I thought way too many teams passed on him. I think he's better than Fox. Like, Kings fans were going at me because I said he was better than Fox. I love his game, but I don't know if he's the third best player in the NBA.
All right. Where's Shea? Let's put them up together. So there's Shea Gorgeous, and then there's
Shea Gorgeous.
Yeah. Why aren't they letting me choose the season? Oh, there we go. Oh, that's interesting. I guess I have to choose.
That's good.
And let's do who was about Haliburton, Tyrese Haliburton, and in the same year. Let's say this is slow. Okay, here we go.
This conversation does prove our point that offense just means more than defense, because these three players we're talking about aren't the greatest defensively.
I got to do a deep dive on Halliburton's defense. I want to see, because I don't know necessarily if Tyrese Haliburton is that bad at defense.
No, I didn't say they're that bad. First of all, Jokic has been above average, and he's not elite, but he's been above average at times, especially during their finals run. I don't think Haliburton is horrible, but none of those guys are elite.
Okay, well, let's do this by per 36, so we normalize for pace.
We need some nuance here, Coach Nick. Just because you're not elite doesn't mean you're terrible, right?
All right, that's true. So here's the points per 36. You got Shea is 31.1 and Tyrese is 28.6. So Shea's got him there by a few points. Assists, you have Tyrese at 12.5 and you have Shea at 6.5. Rebounds.
Tyrese is the best. Yeah, he's
rebounds. Shea's at 6 and Tyrese is at 3.8. Okay, so it's a back and forth battle. Free throw percentage are both elite. Shea's at 94%, though. That might be leading the league. And then 88% for Tyrese Haliburton. Three-point shooting. Haliburton is flame-throwing at 40, almost 45%, and he's taking more than 9 a game. And meanwhile, Shea is at 36.5, 37%, and he only takes less than 4. So overall, the field goal percentage, actually, it's interesting. Let's look at the effective field goal percentage, because that's going to have to be the biggest point. Let's see here. EFG is.
Also, I would have to say that OKC has the better basketball team as of right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Well, that is very true. Yeah. I see true shooting. That's good enough, I guess. The true shooting is Tyrese Haliburton 67.2 and Shea is 63.8. So you go back and forth, and there's a good arguments for both, but man, that's interesting. All right. You have 1 minute for one more super chat.
Yeah. Let's finish
thank
here.
You, thank you, Jim. Another super chat. Thank you so much for all you guys, for Jim and for Martin, for the super chats today. Why does Detroit never get better? It's a wow. Well, there's a thing about management, right? There is a thing about management, who they are, who they're hiring, who they're putting in place, the culture, all that's part of it. Monty Williams, good coach? Is he a good coach?
It doesn't look good right now. He had a great run with the Suns, but it doesn't look good right now.
Maybe.
What would you do differently is the question.
Right.
I mean, more Jaden Ivey minutes?
I mean, yeah, that's a very strange thing, right? He went from starting and playing to, like, basically losing them all, and it's not really clear why. I actually started to look a little bit into this and, like, why and who took his minutes, and I was looking at it.
Killian Hayes.
Well, no, but Killian Hayes was playing alongside him a lot last year.
Well, that's not a great duo. I think.
Okay. So they went with one or the other. So, okay. Yeah. You know, but there's, they're letting the, Amen. No, the brother who is
Asar. Asar is great, by the way. Asar is a winning basketball player right now.
Fair enough. I think he's going to get better minutes at that sort of at that same position.
You could play Asar, Cade, and Jaden together.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And Cade is like getting some shade as well out of all this too.
There's not enough shooting
right
around Cade.
Right. So I don't know if it matters what Monty's going to do because they don't have enough spacing and everyone's loading up on everybody in the lane. And that's not really his fault. That's going to be a GM thing. You know, I mean, they had a stretch where they had, you know, a coach who I didn't think was great in before this with Casey. So, you know, Casey seemed like a bit of a dinosaur and just didn't know how to be more modern. And that goes a long way to giving you 4 years of not winning. But it goes back farther than that, right? I mean, when's the last time they had a really good season? Gosh, I can't remember. Can you, off the top of your head?
When they won the championship with Chauncey Billups?
I mean, that's 2004. Right, but they were better before that. Here they won the finals 2003-04. Then they had a nice run. They lost the finals the next year. They went to the conference final for 3 years in a row. But then since then they you know barely made they only made the playoffs twice since 2008-09. So it's been really really brutal. And you know my guy Sam Van Gundy had him and was very mediocre. You know you got to get a lot of things in line, and that's you know modern coaching techniques unlock some stuff that might get it. They probably weren't incentivized for a couple of those years thinking they'd get a better draft pick, but I don't know. Meanwhile, my guy James Wiseman barely can get off the bench there. I don't know what's going on.
The Carlos Arroyo, Stan Van Gundy. This is a great way to finish. That was pretty funny, right? So what happened? So Carlos Arroyo told him to enjoy the show, and then Stan benched him, and he said, "No, you enjoy the show." Is that what happened?
I have no memory of that, but okay, geez. Anyhow, well, I hope everyone else enjoyed the show while we wrap up here because we gotta get out of here. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for being part of the show. It was a great crowd today. Good discussion. We'll be back again next Monday, right?
Yes.
All right. So there we go. Thank you guys there. Thank you, Combo. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel, we're a conversation. You in?